let me be a part. I'm taking notes, you know, so this is different. Thank you for coming out. My name is Jizzo, y'all don't know, aka Genius from the Wu-Tang Clan. And I must say, it's an honor to be here lecturing today at Harvard University. Thank you. I would like to thank a few people before I get started. Don, right here. Sanoki, from the Harvard Black News Forum. I would like to thank Alvin Carter, from the Harvard Hip Hop Archives. John Wren and his team, Brogue Institution. Eric Landa, Phil Richardson, Penny Chisholm, David Kaiser, Tom McCover or Matt Over? Matt Over. Ethan Zuckerman, big up Facebook. My homeboy Juno Diaz, Pagan Kennedy, Mary Carmichael. Thanks for having me again. Thank you. I had a very interesting day today, also yesterday. I actually feel like I shouldn't be here speaking to y'all. I should be learning from y'all. You know, it's an honor. I visited Parsons Lab. Amazing place, seeing so many different things today. Learned a lot from speaking, you know, to the professors and staff and all the students around there working real hard and seeing what other people are doing, which is a great thing because a lot of people, you know, they end up with jobs and careers that they hate and they become angry and mean and mad and they're only working for the money. It's not a good thing. As many of you know, I hail from Staten Island. We call that Shaolin Wu-Tang. But some of y'all may not know I'm a Brooklynite, you know, born in Brooklyn. But by the time I moved to Staten Island or Shaolin at the age of 10, I had already lived in the Bronx, Crown Heights, Jamaica, Queens, Bushwick. Oh, we got Jamaica in the house. My earliest memories when I first moved to Shaolin back in the days running around with RZA was around 1975. It was around the time when hip hop was fresh and young, and kids were attracted to it like it was candy. It was something new, it was fresh, it was giving us something to do. At that time, Dirty was around the same age as RZA. He would often come to Shaolin from Brooklyn and visit. You know, we would just hang out, run around, do things kids do all the time. You know, playing on rafts back in the lakes when we couldn't even swim. You know, skating and doing things like that. All the stuff that I did when I was young, you know, as a kid, skateboarding and all that. Like I said, this was around the time I started rhyming. Hip hop was new. The rest of the clan I met from childhood up until when we formed the group. As far as lyrical wordplay, it began for me at an early age before I was even introduced to hip hop. I used to have this book that was filled with these nursery rhymes that I was already well versed, you know, on the lyrical side. So I had this book that was filled with all these nursery rhymes, and I would study and go back and forth, change them around. So by the time hip-hop, or I was introduced to hip-hop, I already had a little flow, a little thing going on here. I'm actually shaking. When I was 9, I was living in Bushwick. I had an aunt that I used to visit all the time. Her name was Aunt Mary. I used to like to go to her house because she had a piano. Not too many people had pianos back then. she would show me how to play. You know, one of the first songs she showed me was a gospel song. She also thought that I should take lessons, and she insisted on it, and she would pay for it. But I had another cousin, a female cousin, who talked me out of it. She said it was a sissy thing. She was a teenager playing the piano, so I kind of, she convinced me. But to this day, I wish, you know, I regret not taking the lessons. Another reason I used to go to my aunt's house all the time, and she had this album, the Last Poet album. You know the Last Poets, right? She had this Last Poet album, and they had these dudes that were just flowing on there. This great poetry that just pulled me in. They had these bongos and all this stuff playing in the back. But one of the reasons that I used to like to listen to the album was it had so much profanity on it. So I would go to her house and I'd go in the living room and I'd listen to these songs. And they also had the lyrics inside the sleeve, right? And I would read along while I was listening to this music. I don't even think my aunt ever heard this album that she had. She wouldn't let me listen to it anyway. So. Throughout my early years of MCing, you know, I was part of several groups. You know, I started at a very young age. I was part of several groups. One was called Mission Impossible. The homeboy of mine, his name was Jackpot. It was called Scotty Watt back then. He actually told me to this day, you know, he told me how we met. He said we met in the library, reaching for the same book. I don't remember that though. We had a group called Mission Impossible, the FOI, myself, Dirty Wizard. And then we formed the All In Together Now crew. Dirty used to mention that in several songs. We formed the All In Together Now crew. That was around 1984. RZA, he was the scientist. Dirty was the specialist. And they gave me the name Genius. I never wanted that title. Because I thought people would expect too much, you know, being a genius, so I didn't want to lose it. You know, I can remember a time also where we did a show and we put on a flyer, because Dirty was doing, he was a beatbox, and we had put on a flyer, the specialist, but I took his title, the professor. He didn't like that. I didn't want to use genius because I thought too much was expected from it. Plus, it wasn't enough words that rhyme with genius. We would formulate routines together. We would formulate routines and come up with ideas. And we would battle. Run all across Brooklyn, go through Staten Island, battling dudes. I actually remember one time, Dirty and I, we went to Staten Island and we battled New Guard and Capadonna. Method Man also, at that time we didn't really, you know, I hadn't known Cap for years, but we didn't really know Method. Dirty didn't know any of them. We went out there to battle, but we were in Shaolin and we were battling. And I had moves with me, I had moves. It's been maybe about 5-6 years. So we were back out there and we were battling, but we had the crowd was against us because Capadonna had the whole place screaming, "Killer, killer, hell, killer, hell." So we kind of outnumbered. Those were our early days of rhyming. You know, that's what it was about, battling. We also used to walk around Brooklyn battling fools. We would look for whoever was the best. We would look for them. Just like a kung fu flick, you know. Dude that have skills. You go out looking for them. You challenge them. See what he's about. What he's worth. You know. You clash your swords. And you be a friendly dude. Not like nowadays. You know, shootouts now. You know, rap battles. But we kept it clean back then until we met the Discmasters. I mean, it should have dawned on me. And He was destined to. Almost started a fight. But so we would make these ideas and routines together and practice. And somebody asked if I ever wrote rhymes with Dirty. Well, we each use each other rhymes, you know, kind of recycled them because we wrote lyrics together. This is something nowadays artists don't, you know, they don't write together. Sometimes you do songs and don't even meet the artist or the person who you're getting on the song with. Because of Pro Tools and all this modern technology, things like that. So we don't even get to see the person who we're getting on the track with. But hip hop was so much part of our lives back then that we incorporated in just about everything we did was involved around hip hop. That's how much we loved it. You know, we would sit up all night, we would write lyrics, we would talk about rhyme flow, and we had pretty good lyrics at the time, you know, an abundance of good lyrics. We would always strive to be clever, be witty, be intelligent at the same time, and not dumb down, you know. One of the things about ODB, well, one of the things about him's poetry, or, you know, his album is that, you know, poetry ends with the composition, whereas rhyming, you know, continues with the record and also being live. ODB, like I said, he was a human beatbox, you know, he was a multi-talented dude. RZA was also, they were DJs, MCs, and beatbox. I was just an MC. I tried to do what it was being. I was kind of good with feet a little, but I used to use rollers, cups, and records to get everything straight. But Dirty was a human beatbox, and he was really good. He was one of the best that I've ever heard. And when we were battling, we made these routines, and he would play these beats, and it would be so good. And the irony about it is that I used to write some of his beats. Yeah. Stand in front of him, waving my hands like I was a conductor. And tell him to add a cymbal. And I would actually write on paper, write down music, beats. I can't read music, but, you know, if you looked at what I was writing, it wouldn't make sense to you. It just looked like a whole bunch of crazy stuff. But I used to write these beats for him. He was the specialist. He was really good at it, you know, and as time went on, we progressed, he became better, I became better, we crafted our skills, and we started trying to shop out demos and get a deal, which is a whole nother story. You know, the first time we went to the studio was in 1985, we did a song called True Fresh and Sea. Dirty was doing the beatbox, but I didn't even track playing. You know, it was a small studio. We were just happy to be in it. It was a small 8-track studio. It was really small and hot and funky. You know, this thing that was called the Papa Stopper. You know, I know what the Papa Stopper is. It's that net. You know that net filters thing that's in front of the microphone? In the lab today, you know, talking about viruses and germs. It was so much of that in there. But we were happy to be in there, you know, we did the song. I mean, we were rhyming before rap was on wax. So it wasn't like our goal or we were trying to be an MC when we got older. We just did it for the love. It was in our heart from day one. You know, nowadays a lot of kids want to be rappers because they think they can make a lot of money. They think it's a thing to do. You get girls, you know, it's cool. You have all this status and you get all this money. And they don't really have respect for the art, you know, which is not a good thing. So, we would make these demos and we spent years trying to shop them, sending them to labels, trying to get hooked up with people. But, you know, it took a while, but we still had had the drive, we were still determined to do it because we loved to do it. Finally got a deal, got signed, you know, put out music, and then, well, let me go back. 6 months before recording Protect Your Neck, I had just left Cold Chillin' Records, and RZA had just left Tommy Boy Records due to lack of promotion, support for our records. The label I was signed to was too busy, or too occupied trying to support their bigger acts, which is, you know, I understand it now because it is a business. And they were also looking for music that was kind of similar to what was out there already. That's what labels do. It's a hit, they want to follow it. That's how it is. But they were looking for something like that, and we clashed, and it didn't work. And it was kind of disappointing and discouraging because we had spent so many years making demos and trying to shop out deals and calling labels and sending tapes. And I'm sure the label had a trash room that went from the mail room to the trash room. That's what they do with a lot of artists. On top of that, I made a foolish move by quitting a city job that I had to take a test for and wait 4 years for them to hire me. Yeah, I used to work for the Transit Authority. I was still on probation because I had a record deal. So my head was like, you know, kind of souped up about it. And so this first experience in music